All right, we're going to do a little pregame with Shane Edge. Pre-interview. He's got us in his shrine.
There you go. Well, I call it the Gator Room.
Okay.
My wife says it's the Shane Edge Shrine. So let's see if we can figure this out.
We have to bow down and pay homage.
There you go.
Look at that.
Can I?
Well, I like it.
Here we go. Well, we have the SEC championship rings here.
There they are, ladies and gentlemen.
There they are.
Beautiful.
And then, of course, the jersey. And okay.
This is
a combination of everybody. We got Brock Edge, my son, that's
right.
In jersey here.
I was going to ask that.
From Florida. And then we got all the diplomas up here. We're waiting for one more. Megan, our daughter, she's waiting for her. That's her spot right there. Then we have the me and Judd and Sam McCorkle.
That's right.
I got that from the locker room when they redid the locker room.
Awesome. So. I was going to ask you about that later in the interview. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Here you go. One more thing I want
to
show you guys. This is the get a good shot of that. That's right before I got into the fight in Pittsburgh.
That'll come up too.
The 3 weeks later, we had a guy did a sheet. You know how to do those sheets? We were on NBC that week. Said Shane Edge, NFL boxing champ.
Oh, for NBC.
Oh, NBC, there you go.
Nice.
Bringing Gator Nation a different Gator great every episode.
This is Jabari Gaffney. You're listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
Hey, I'm Earl Everett. You're not a Gator, you're Gator bait.
This is Bo Carroll.
Hey, I'm Rita Anthony.
This is Kewan Ratliff, and you are listening to All for the Gators podcast.
This is Cetric Faison, a.k.a. C4.
This is Brandon James.
This is Jack Jackson. Go Gators.
Hi, this is your boy Jeremy Mincy, a.k.a. Mr. Mince, and we with the All for the Gators podcast.
This is Ben Trooper. You listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
Hey, guys, this is Jarvis Moss. Go Gators.
You rocking with Leto Shepard, and we're all for the Gators podcast, man. Top notch.
This is Chris Doering, and you're listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
And now, your Gator alumni hosts, John, Andy, and Sid.
Are we on?
The REC on the screen would indicate we are, but there's not a lot of action happening yet.
That's it. I'm entering the transfer portal. I'm done.
The transfer portal. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'm heading over to the All for the Noles podcast.
Ooh. The April Fool's joke.
Oh, it was good too.
So what sort of feedback did we get from our little joke there?
Oh, tons of people loved it.
Oh, nice.
Loved it. It was just a post on social media saying that we've, you know, transitioned our show to, you know, more align with our love for the Florida State Seminoles, and it's now all for the Noles. And it was a nice picture of Thad Busby, former Noles quarterback extraordinaire.
Well done. Well done.
And if they look closely, the logo, which is usually the Native American, I guess. I don't want to get canceled.
Chief Osceola.
Yeah.
That's I'm being it. Specific. That's I can't get canceled. Yeah. That's actual factual. Chief Osceola. Please continue.
So if you look at it on our post in the logo, it's a funny parody of Chief Osceola, so that would tell everybody that it was actually a joke. But tons of interaction and likes and stuff on that, so that was good.
I heard All for the Noles podcast is already one of the top Noles podcasts out there, so you know.
Oh, jeez.
Could be. Well, one of the top players at his position ever is on the show tonight, fellas.
Really?
I'm excited about this one.
I like that.
Yeah. Multiple previous guests told us we got to get this guy on, so I'm excited about it.
Well, let's get right to it.
Let's do it.
Here we go.
And my wife's baking alarm is going off. Tomorrow's our son's birthday, so she's...
The king of making sure we are as silent as we can be.
This is not this a... Guy, do as I say,
he's
not
the
as
one
I
with
do
the sound.
Situations.
Can I get to the intro, please?
This is poetic
Here
justice.
We go. Stand by. Guys, today's Gator Great was another from those first Spurrier teams, the trendsetters, winning the SEC championships pretty much every year. And as a matter of fact, today's guest made one of the most critical plays for the Gators in SEC championship history. He was actually from the Peach State, but he made his way down to Florida playing for Columbia High in Lake City. After graduating, he trekked down 75 for about an hour, landed in the swamp where he would become nothing short of the best punter to ever don the orange and blue. Need evidence? He was voted by the fans to the All-Century Gators team in 2006, and that was to celebrate 100 years of Gator football. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you three-time All-SEC, four-time All-American honorable mention, and three-time SEC champion with number 14 on his chest, Mr. Randall Shane. Don't push me over the edge. Shane Edge!
Now, see, I like that. I definitely got to make sure that everybody hears that. That's the greatest intro I've ever had.
All right.
Shane, man, so cool to have you on with us today. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, heck no. I appreciate you guys having me on. You guys do a great job. I was listening to a couple of podcasts today that you guys were doing.
Okay, cool. Which one?
Awesome. We appreciate that.
Which ones did you listen to?
I was listening. Obviously, I was listening to Coach Zook.
That was a good one.
It was a very good one. Both of them, both parts.
Yes.
I kind of wish you guys would have asked me a couple of questions before you had Coach Zook on, because he and I have a long storied history together.
No. So. Okay. Well, we'll get to some of that later on in the interview. First off, I said in the intro, don't push me over the edge. Obviously referring to Chris Berman's nickname for you. Any other punters or kickers get a nickname from Chris Berman? How cool is that?
That is pretty sweet. I'm real proud of that nickname, by the way. And believe me, the NFL likes my fine money that they charged me for getting that nickname when I got kicked out of the game in Pittsburgh. But no, I can't think of anything. Not even the great Pat McAfee has a Chris Berman nickname, I wouldn't think.
That's right. He doesn't.
All right. Well, we're going to get to the reason for the nickname a little bit later, but let's start with high school. Being from Georgia, how did you get down to Florida? And I hate to ask it, but were you a Dogs fan growing up?
Oh, believe it or not, I was. I was a huge Georgia Bulldog fan.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us.
There you go. I was a Georgia fan. I actually was more of a Georgia Tech fan. I had two uncles that played at Georgia Tech. One played football and baseball. And one played baseball at Georgia Tech. So I was a big Tech fan, but Herschel Walker and Pat Dooley were big at the time. Pat Dooley, good Lord.
Vince Dooley,
there you go, Vince Dooley. And even in 89, the Buck Blue catch, I was still a Georgia fan at that time. But I moved down to Georgia, or moved down from Conyers, Georgia, when I was 13 years old, moved to Lake City. My dad moved down here. So I went to middle school here and then went to Columbia High School. My girlfriend at the time, wife, now we always had a bet: whoever won the Georgia Florida game, the other had to wear the opposite shirt. I never had to wear a Gator shirt, which was at the time was pretty neat. But obviously that changed. When I was getting recruited and things like that from Florida, and of course it was right down the road, and Coach Berger was just coming aboard, and we won the SEC in 1990. It was a pretty big deal.
How was the recruiting? Did Spurrier get involved at all, or was it the position coach?
No, it was actually Coach Spurrier. It was a good story. Coach Spurrier, the first time Coach Spurrier ever saw me punt was in my backyard. He came to the house. And my dad loved the recruiting process. It was the greatest thing in the world to him. Teams would call every night. Somebody would call from Notre Dame or Alabama or Georgia Tech or Tennessee, Florida, whatever. It got to the point where I really didn't want to talk to those guys. Hey, Dad, you take care of it, because he loved it. He loved it so much. We went to a kicking camp up in Tennessee when Johnny Majors was the head coach. He was recruiting me to come up and punt. It was supposed to be a camp for just regular football players to come up and do the 40s and things like that. But I was there strictly to punt. They brought me up there and I punted in the Neyland Stadium. The special teams coach and Johnny Majors is there, and he said, "Hey, we want to see what you can do, this, that, and the other." So I go through this big workout for about an hour. Now we go. My dad comes and he picks me up, and I said, "Dad, listen," I said, "you got to understand." I said, "I don't need you to say a word. We're going to go see Coach Majors. We're going to go into his office." He said, "What do you think they're going to do? Offer you a scholarship?" I said, "Listen, I know that's what he's going to do, but you can't say anything. Don't say yes. Don't say no. Just don't say anything." So we get in there and we go through this whole, spiel about how he wants me to be a volunteer and this, that, and other. And he looked at me and said, Shane, we want you to be a volunteer. We're going to offer you a full scholarship. I couldn't say a word before my dad says, we'll take it.
Oh, no.
So he's hollering, we'll take it. And Coach Major said, hey, listen, we can't have you sign today, but we really want Shane to be a volunteer. And I wanted to choke him as soon as we got it. I told you not to say anything. But he got so excited, he's, you know, we'll take it and this, that, and other. But we had a really good time up there. And my dad loves Tennessee. He loves going to Gatlinburg. He loves going up there and visiting. So he thought that he was going to move up to Gatlinburg or, you know, up there in Knoxville. And Shane Edge is going to be a volunteer. But that's not going to happen. Because they were actually not bad in the punting position. I can't remember who was there at the time, but I believe he was a redshirt junior or something like that. So, but Coach Spurrier, like I said, he came to the house, and my dad, you know, was loving life. He's, you know, Coach Spurrier's here at the house, and, you know, what can we do? And he says, hey, you want to see Shane punt some? What?
So you had your own private pro day.
The backyard. There you go. That's exactly what it was. We go out in the backyard, and I'm punting, and, you know, Coach Spurrier goes back to the office, and a couple of days later, we want you to be a Gator. So it was pretty neat.
So you mentioned that you got to go to this big event up in Tennessee. How back then did punters get noticed? Did you play any other positions? Were you considering doing anything else? Or was it always going to be punting? And like, how did somebody in Florida get noticed to get invited to Tennessee for a big event like that?
Well, you know what's crazy is I really didn't like to punt. I didn't like to, you know, I kicked and punted for the high school. But when I moved down to Florida and, you know, went through it was junior high at the time, it was eighth and ninth grade here in Lake City. The head coach, Donnie Harrison, he said, hey, can anybody punt? Heck, coach, I can give it a shot. I can see and I can do that pretty well. He said, what about kicking? Can you kick? Yeah, but I was mainly a free safety and quarterback. And receiver. So I was a pretty good athlete. And, a matter of fact, Clemson recruited me to play quarterback because we ran the option. So they were recruiting me at quarterback. Georgia Tech was recruiting me as a punter. Of course, all these schools wanted me to punt. That's, you know, because I was pretty good in high school, but, Georgia Tech wanted me to play DB. We had several schools that wanted me to do both, you know, punt and play a different position. And one of the reasons I came to Florida is James Bates' dad, Jim Bates, was the defensive coordinator.
Right.
And I asked him, hey, is there any way that I can play both? You know, he said, oh, yeah, no problem. Well, he left as soon as I got to Florida. He moved on. I think he went to the Cleveland Browns. But I love Coach Bates. He was always, you know, really good, and he's a great defensive coordinator. So he bounced around the NFL quite a bit. But I always like to tell James, you know, your dad's the reason I'm here. you know, but yeah, I was a pretty decent athlete. The spring of my sophomore year, I decided, okay, well, Coach Zook had moved in at the time. I can remember I'll get back to my freshman year. Coach Zook had moved in, and he was a special teams coordinator and the defensive backs coach here. And I see him walking down the street there before we had started practice, because I graduated early, and I moved into the spring. So I came in the spring semester. So I got a hold, just like these kids do now. I did that way back when. Golly, that was 30 some odd years ago, but, I saw Coach Zook, and he said, he was previously at Ohio State. And, he said, hey, Shane, how you doing? And to be honest with you, I had no idea who he was. Hmm. And, he said, he looked at me, he said, you don't remember me, do you? I said, no, I'm sorry. I don't remember. He said, I'm Coach Zook. I've been talking to your ass for the last 3-4 weeks trying to get you to come to Ohio State. I said, coach, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't recognize you, whatever. But yeah, I was recruited at different positions. I still like to tell everybody I'm the greatest athlete on any team I've ever played on. So.
Well, I can imagine a well-rounded athlete like that, that's a punter, would be a hot commodity. But
So when you came to campus, did you redshirt or did you grab the starting job right off the bat in 91?
No, I can easily say I grabbed it right off the bat in 91, but that's not the case. The Orange and Blue game just happened this weekend, and believe it or not, Judd Davis, he's one of my best friends now, but at the time, Judd was a punter. A lot of people don't know that, but Judd, because Florida was struggling so bad to punt, and that's one of the reasons I came. I can remember going to the Auburn game down in the swamp and the LSU game down in the swamp, and the North End Zone was being built at the time. And I can remember after a punt, the lights flashing up, 25-yarder. I was like, what? I told my dad, I said, listen, if I can't punt there, I can't punt anywhere. Okay. So let's go there and we'll see how it goes. So when I first came in, Judd and I actually had a bet during the Orange and Blue game, whoever had the highest average, the other one would buy, you know, lunch or whatever it was. But even into the first game, we played San Jose State. You know, the North End Zone was open. It was a big deal. It was the biggest crowd in the history of the University of Florida. We still didn't know who was going to punt, whether it be me, Judd, or Art Krzyzewski at the time. So we didn't punt in the first half, and Coach Spurrier comes in there halftime. He says, Shane, you got the first one. Well, we get in there, the first one, and I hit a terrible punt. I was so scared. I couldn't even hardly see anybody, much less the ball coming at me. I was so nervous. So the first punt, I think it was a 31-yard punt. I didn't hit it very good. You can hear all the crowd. Now, they hadn't had a good punter here in a while, so you could hear them. But the greatest thing happened, my second punt was a really high snap. I jumped up and grabbed it with one hand, got the ball down and got it off, and it was a 61-yard punt. And a nice spiral turned over, and crowd goes nuts. And Judd actually tells a story. You know, when I came off, he said, Shane, you were white as a ghost that first punt because you just had a 31-yard punt. You were so nervous and this, that. And so the second time, I had the 61-yard punt, and then the very next punt, I had another 62-yard punt. Whew. Judd said he walked over to the bench, unstrapped his shoulder pads, and said, okay, I'm back to kicking.
Did Spurrier say anything after the 31-yarder?
No. Coach Spurrier, he was so pissed off, he couldn't even see straight. So he don't like to punt anyway. You know, Coach Spurrier and I, you know, we had a good relationship. I do my job, and he didn't say a whole lot. But no, he didn't like to punt anyway. So after the game, he came up to me, Shane, that's a really good job. You know, he told me I did a great job. And what was funny is Tim saying, you know, we're handing out game balls at the end of the game. And Tim Sain was the equipment manager at the time. And he said, how about the punter? Because I think I averaged like 48 yards a punt or whatever it was. Coach Spurrier says, we'll see how the punter does when he's in the back of the end zone against Alabama.
Classic. Well,
believe
Spurrier,
it or not.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
He was a prophet, though.
We played
right?
Alabama. Yep. He was. 2 weeks later, we play Alabama in the first punt. My feet are in the end zone. I'm scared to death. No, I get a decent punt out. I think it was 38 yards, 39 yards, something like that. And then I punted pretty good after that. But I had some of my best games as a freshman. I think I averaged like 44 yards a punt, something like that, as a freshman, 43-8 or something.
Did Coach Spurrier give you – you said he kind of left you to your own thing, but I know he was very proud of his kicking from his time as a player. So did he ever come and impart any wisdom, or was that more in Judd's ear for the kicking part as opposed to the punting?
Oh, no, he would always come over there, especially during pregame or, you know, pre-practice. We would always go out and punt. The specialists would go out, and they'd be there 30, 40 minutes before everybody else got in. We would work on our craft, and then, of course, halfway through practice, we would have special teams period, and then we would do our kicking and punting there. But every once in a while, that jerker would come out there, and, Shane, how you doing? You doing okay today? I said, yes, sir, I'm doing pretty good. He said, let me get one of those. And I kid you not, I don't remember a time where he didn't get the ball, place it on his foot, just like the, and have a 35-yard spiral, just a nice spiral punt every
textbook.
Time. Textbook. I mean, it amazed me that he could still do that. I mean, he was, you know, 34, 35 years old, whatever it was, but he and never failed. I do not remember him missing a punt. I'm being serious. It was crazy. But the reason I'm number 14, you know, the intro – Here's the Spurrier story for you. I go to, you know, I'm number six all throughout the spring. Everything's good all throughout the summer. I'm still number six. Well, about 2 weeks into camp, I'm not doing great. I'm struggling a little bit. And I go to Tim Sain. I say, hey, give me number six. Give me my bag for number six. He said, you're not number six anymore. I said, what? He said, no, you're not number six. I said, okay, so what number am I? So he gives me number 14. So I go out to practice. I'm, you know, working on my stuff and, you know, punting here and there. Coach Berger comes out. He said, Shane, I like that number. And I said, well, it's fine, Coach. He said, well, you really wasn't doing good at number six, so I figured I'd change it to 14.
Oh, man.
So from there on out, I'm number 14.
you should have countered that you're twice the player he was since he was number seven, right?
No, let's not go that far.
Hey, he was 11, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was 11.
Yeah, he was 11. My apologies. 11.
Yep. No, there wasn't very a whole lot of communication back to Coach Ferrer. Whatever he said, I did, and that was it.
You mentioned Judd. Did you guys meet when you arrived on campus, or had you guys met prior to that?
No. I actually, my first roommate at Florida was a guy named Rod Whited. He was a defensive end for us, and Judd was next door. His roommate was a fullback from, oh my goodness, he was from Jacksonville, Kirk Robinson. Kirk was never there, and it just, you know, Judd will tell you, I wish he would have got to this on the podcast when Judd was on. He'll tell you that one of the first times he ever remembers seeing me was in the Yon Hall, and we're in line, and, you know, somebody says something about, you're a rookie or you're a freshman or something like that. And I said, yeah. He said, move, get out of my way. I'm skipping the line. I said, you ain't skipping me, bud. I said, I don't give a rat's ass who you are. You know, so Judd said, I thought you were crazy. I mean, there's no way you're supposed to talk to somebody, you know, that big like that. So, once about the third or fourth week, you know, Kirk was never there with Judd. So he said, why don't we room together? So we got it where we roomed together. So we were roommates even through the spring and the fall when we were competing against one another. That's where we got to be, you know, such close friends. Even though we were competing, we always helped each other, no matter what. And that's what made our he and I so special, because anytime Judd would go into a slump or I would go into a slump, we could talk each other through it. We were our own special teams coach. I mean, truly. So, I mean, because Judd could punt and I could kick. So, we knew. And I never even when I was holding, I never even had to look up. I could tell by the thud of the ball whether it was going to be good or not. I mean, Judd was just so good, he missed very rarely anyway.
So, you were the holder for Judd?
That's the only reason he was that good. The only reason he won the list was. I told Judd several times, you know, the only reason you won the Luke Rosen is because of me. No. But, yeah, I was the holder from because Arden and Johnny Nichols was the holder for Arden. But once they left, it was Judd. And I actually, Bart Edmiston was the kicker my sophomore year. I don't know if you guys remember. Mm-hmm. Bart was the All-American number one kicker in the country. He came in and he had his struggles a little bit, which was great for Judd, unfortunately for Bart, but, you know, they had a kicking competition and it was really, really tough. And once, Coach Spurrier finally gave Judd the option, the opportunity, he took it and never looked back. And, fortunately for me, there was not a whole lot of, punting competition. You know, I was doing pretty good, so we didn't really recruit a lot of punters, junior year. So there were punters that came in, walk-ons, but it wasn't a whole lot of competition, I'll say that.
So, as you know, we had Judd on, right? So he told us some great stories for that you guys kind of got in trouble or things you guys did both on and off the field. So what's your favorite story between the two of you guys?
There's a couple now. And you know, Coach Spurrier would leave you alone. Right? You know, Coach Zips is a different breed. He's a different animal. If you weren't doing perfect. He was going to – in which I always enjoyed. Listen, I'm a competitor. I'm an athlete. You know, when I do something wrong, you crawl my butt. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. You know, so he would always get on. But Coach Burr, you know, if we were doing our job, we wasn't missing field goals, we were punting the ball, we had good, you know, good special teams coverage and, you know, kicking off good and all that. And I kicked off as well, but he would leave us alone. But the used to, before the new facility and stuff like that, the batting cages for the baseball field was behind one of the goalposts. And Judd and I guess they were remodeling or doing something. So Judd and I figured, you know, we would go up on that building and, you know, just kind of look around. What book? I don't know what kind of idiot do this, but we're kind of looking around and, you know, there's several balls up there from previous years and previous practices or whatever. Well, as people would walk by, we would throw balls at them. And Coach Zook, you know, Coach Zook would walk by. You know, we're crawling on the ground like we're in the hardware or something like that. We're getting a ball and we're throwing it over. Coach Zook walked by. And of course, we threw it and hit him. And, you know, everybody's looking up trying to figure out where the hell these balls are coming from. And, you know, neither one of us knew. You know, they have the towers where they film practice back in the day. So Dave Houts was the video guy. And we had no idea. He was videoing us the whole time.
You have no proof.
We didn't think. Well, he came up to us at practice the next day and said, "Hey, guys, I want you to come up to the office for me." "Sure, Dave." Well, you know, I love Dave Houts. A great guy. He says, "If you guys ever do anything that I don't like, this is what I'm going to show Coach Ferger." And it's us in full gear, crawling on the rooftop, getting balls to throw at people. So, oh, goodness, but, yep. And
they should have showed that at, like, Gator Growl.
They should have. They should have. Listen, we did some crazy stuff. And you know, we did our job. A lot of times after special teams practice, we would say we were going to the big house. You know, we'd go over to the stadium and punt and, you know, or we may or may not, you know, hit the showers really early, go to the mall, get something to eat, and come back, and the guys might still be at practice. I don't know. Sometimes that happens. Chris Dookie was a fullback for Eric Ritt. And he used to get so mad when we'd leave. It's like he had a personal vendetta against the kickers and punters because they would leave and go to the big house. And we would be showered up and ready to go, you know, an hour before they get in. But that was just occasionally. It very rarely happened.
Well, that freshman year in 91, you said you had a good year. Well, you earned the freshman All-SEC that year, and the Gators captured their first official SEC championship. What was campus like back then? What was the atmosphere like when that all was starting under Spurrier?
It was like everybody knew what was coming. I know they didn't, and I know nobody knew. Nobody could possibly know, but everybody knew what was coming. It was crazy because I can remember on the bus going on Friday nights, going to the hotels before the home games, they would write the scores of the previous week's game in the road on the way. They would paint the scores. It was like they knew that we were not going to get beat. I mean, everybody expected us to win, no matter what. So it was, like I said, it was crazy. It was almost national championship or bust. The SEC, after 90, winning the SEC, not, you know, of course it not being official, but after 90 and then 91, where we won it outright, everybody just kind of knew, hey, this seems like something's good about to go happen here. And, you know, you go walk around campus and people knew who you played football and, you know, they just enjoyed it. Everybody enjoyed it. It was a great time. I'm kind of hoping we can get back to that. Not kind of. I'm really hoping we get back to that. But it seemed like everybody knew something special was about to happen. And then Coach Spurrier goes on and wins, what, five of the next six SEC championships, and then they win the national championship in 96.
I got to ask, for a punter's perspective, when you're on the sideline there, obviously you want to get on the field and get in the action, but at the same time, you only get on the field if the offense fails. And obviously in this era, the offense didn't fail too often. So you either had a lot of downtime cheering on your friends out there or you were getting out there. But what is it like when you're sitting on the sidelines? And, you know, what is that mindset? Like, are you eager to get on the field or hoping that you don't get a chance because that means the offense is rolling and you guys are winning?
Well, as crazy as this is going to sound, Judd and I had the best seats in the house. Okay. And we sit there and we talk just like somebody in the stands. We're sitting there. We're watching the ball game just like you guys. And there's no difference. And I think that's what, why Judd and I were so good together, because we were not too now. After, of course, this is after we both got really established, but, we watched the games and, you know, hey, it's third down. I probably need to go hit one or two in the net, you know, to get my leg loose or whatever, whether it's going to be a field goal or a punt. But we were so relaxed. I'll tell you how relaxed I was. I think in 93, one of the first couple of games, you know, I've got a little pea head and Judd's got a big watermelon head. So his helmet's a lot bigger than mine.
I think
so,
Judd told us.
Yeah,
this
we
story.
Heard this
yeah.
one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, listen, yes. So I go over there and I grab a helmet. And, you know, I get out on the field. I'm strapping the chin strap, and the daggum helmet is so big that I can't see a thing. I've got to pick the face mask up just to see the snap coming. Realize, of course, it was Judd's helmet. So after every time I go to punt now, I'd slap his helmet and go out there and do my job. But yeah, I tell you, a lot of times, you know, I would be there waiting his third down and I'd kind of watch the play and see what was going on. I've caught Coach Spurrier's visor several times. And I know, if we don't get it on third down, sometimes that visor will start flowing. And I've caught it a couple of times and just handed it right back to him as I'm going on to the field to punt.
That's great.
So I got a question. Spurrier was, you know, famous for punting on third down.
Oh, yeah.
Did that ever happen while you?
Oh yeah, there? Yeah.
And how did that?
Yeah,
did that catch you off guard?
No, well, he would say it every once in a while in practice. Hey, just punt. Let's punt. We can't do anything better. This is the worst offense, you know, whatever. But I can remember there was a game that we got sacked. We took a holding penalty. Something else happened, and it was a second down. He said, "Hey, get ready to punt." Oh, shoot, what? You know, so we do something stupid again on second down and third down. Hey, go punt. Just punt. So I definitely did that my first year, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. I got to ask you a question. I'm just curious, as a football fan, from a punter's perspective, did it ever bother you when you had to go in and do like a pooch punt to get it inside the 20 that would knock down your average?
Oh, listen, you know, everybody is out there to help the team. 100%. That's what we do. You know, right. when Coach Spurrier would call a punt from 35 yard line, I'm so upset I can't see straight. I'm hoping that we get a penalty or, you know, something to move us back. And I always tell the guys, somebody up front, hey,
good time for a false start right? Or a hold.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say, hey, false start. And, you know, Matt Pearson was my personal protector up there. I said, Matt, somebody got to jump offside. We got to do something. And, you know, just not being selfish just for my average. But, you know, and then it was, you know, when we were punting from the 50 or something like that and the ball goes into the end zone, it's still a 30-yard net, which is not very good. But I'd come to the sideline and I'd kind of look over to Judd and I said, boy, I got a hold of that one. You know, I kick it through the end zone. So. No, we would always say it does suck. It really does. But, you know, and what's crazy is the way they punt the ball now, they have that end-over-end stuff where you can – they know exactly how far it's going. It's going 35 yards and, you know, 4-5, 5-0 hang time. We didn't do that stuff. We tried to cough and corner and things like that.
You brought up 93, so mm-hmm. Let's go right to that 93 SEC championship. Many say the play of the game was yours. Florida leading Bama 14-13 in the third quarter, 4th and 8, your own 37, and a defender gets through the protection. Take it from there. Tell us how it went down.
Well, before that happened, there was a couple of, we punted a couple of times, and there was a kid that came up the middle. I can't remember exactly who it was, but there was a kid come up the middle, and he almost blocked a punt one time. And I told myself, I said, listen, if that punt or snap is not perfect, I'm taking off. I said, it's got to be perfect, because if it's not and I've got to take a little bit more time, they're going to block it. And then that's, you know, generally when you get a punt block, that's the end of the game. You're going to lose the game. So I knew ahead of time if it was not perfect that I was going to run. Well, perfect is you know, in the mind of the holder, I guess. But the ball was about on my right shoulder, which was not a bad snap at all. But I took a couple of steps, and a guy came, you know, he pretty much came free, and I took off around the right side. And I took off, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. I'm running, and I see the first down marker, and I said, forget the first down. I'm going to score. You know, So I cut back, and old linebacker, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen the film lately, but the next time you see it, a linebacker hits me, and he hits me hard, too. He gets the best of me, and I land on my back, and we end up sliding about a couple of yards. But his face mask is right in front of mine, and I'm pointing at him. I'm telling him, we're going to kick y'all's ass. And, of course, the very next play, Terry Dean hits Jack Jackson for a touchdown, yep. and we go on to win the game.
Nice. Did Spurrier have a play in the playbook for you, a fake punt?
We had.
Considering your athleticism?
We did. We had several. We had a couple, you know, one where I'd pass in, and generally we wasn't too much on running the ball, but we had a couple of the passing plays out of it. But it was funny after the game, you know, we're on the plane coming back to the house, and Coach Spurrier comes back there. He says, Shane, those media guys asked me, did I call that play? And he said, Shane, I told him I did. Made me look smarter. But he definitely did not call that play. And even to this day, if you go to the bathroom in Spurrier's restaurant, you know, they have plays up on the wall there.
Yeah.
Important plays, that play is up on the wall in the bathroom several times.
Oh, wow. Awesome. Okay, that's
cool. Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah.
Do you have a picture pointing to it? Does it have your name on it?
No, it's just an edge around the right side, fake punt, 93 SEC championship game.
All right, cool.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Besides that play, is there another kick or maybe a tackle on a return or something that kind of sticks with you that you remember to this day?
No, not. I remember almost all of them, but we were playing LSU in '92. I believe it was '92 at home. I had another fake punt, and again, same thing. I ran around, and I think I got 13, 14 yards or whatever it was. But again, the LSU guy lit me up. But the adrenaline was flowing, and I threw the ball up in the air as high as I could throw it in the air. I'm surprised I didn't get a penalty, but. But the Tennessee game was special. I averaged 54 yards a punt my freshman year there. Then the 91 game against Notre Dame in the Superdome, I broke a Sugar Bowl record there. That was pretty neat. And then got a story for the 93. Oh, goodness, I guess we'll go ahead and start. I'll tell you guys that story. everybody knows Lawrence Wright. You're not a Gator, you're Gator bait.
Yep.
And, I was known to lose my cool every once in a while, but we're going to a function in 93 when we're playing West Virginia. And, I'm sitting on the bus, Judd and I are sitting on the bus, and somebody flicks my ear from behind. And I say, hey guys, I'm not in the mood. Don't play with me, whatever. So, of course, you know what happens. They flick my ear again or pop me in the back of the head again. And I said, I had to look back and I said, hey, I'm telling y'all, don't do it again. Don't hit me again. Of course, you guys know what happens. So when they flick my head again, I stand up in the two, you know, there's two seats on each side of the aisle. So I stand up and Lawrence is the first one I see. So I assume he's the one that hit me. So I hit that jerker as hard as I could as he was getting up. I hit him on the forehead, and my right pinky, I thought I broke my hand. There was no question I broke my hand. So I grabbed him and put him in a headlock and went to hit him again. But my pinky obviously was hurting. So they break us up, thank God, because Lawrence was going to kill me. I mean, there was no question what was going to happen. So they break us up fairly quickly. So myself, Judd, Chris Doering and Sorolla Palmer, we all go to the casino after the dinner. So the longer the night goes, the bigger my hand gets. I mean, it's starting to swell up like a watermelon. It's really bad. So we get back, before curfew. I'll say that like we actually got back before curfew. But so about 2 o'clock, I go to Ross Davis, and he was a head trainer at the time. I said, "Hey man," I said, "something wrong with my hand." He said, "What happened?" I told him. He said, "You broke it." And I said, "Well, I know it's swollen. It's really swollen." So, and that was the first dinner that we went to in 93. And, so all week in practice, I couldn't punt. I had this half cast. We did an x-ray and it bent my bone. It didn't break it, but it bent it. It's still bent to this day. But, so we were not thinking about anything, but Judd had to punt that week. You know, the whole week, Judd was punting, and then Sorolla Palmer was holding. And of course, Judd was real upset about that because Sorolla didn't care about holding. He'd just try to get it down, whatever. But so about, I guess the day before the game, I'm sitting there. I said, "Forget this." So I take that half cast off, and I punt. And luckily for us, I broke the Sugar Bowl record that I previously owned. I had a 53-yard average in the Sugar Bowl, so that was a pretty neat little story.
Very cool. That is a great story.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Judd was worried he was going to have to punt during the game.
So looking back at your time, I mean, we're talking three SEC championships in 4 years. This is the golden age of the Spurrier Gators teams, and obviously our more recent years, we haven't sniffed that same kind of success. Looking back on it now, how significant is that to you, especially seeing how it isn't just an automatic assumption that the Gators are in an SEC championship game, let alone winning it? The fact that you do have those rings very nicely displayed, as you showed us earlier. Thank you. So how does that, reflecting all these years later, how do you look back on that and that championship success you had?
It's kind of weird because, like I said earlier, we expected it. We really didn't. There was not a game that we went into that we didn't expect to win. I mean, and that's just from the players to the coaches to everybody, you know, everybody in the building. We just expected to win every game, and we had the firepower to win every game. And you just thought that at the University of Florida, that talent is just going to keep rolling in and rolling in and rolling in. But it's, you know, now it's just with the NIL and all that stuff, and, you know, college football is just totally different than the way it used to be. And, you know, I was always a proponent when Coach Spurrier went to South Carolina and then he wanted to come back and they hired Urban. I wish they would have hired Coach Spurrier back, but, you know, Urban did his thing and he won a couple of championships, but you just thought that it would continuously to roll over and we would be competing for at least the SEC championship every year, you know, hopefully the national championship, but it's just hadn't been that way. It's weird because at the University of Florida, you would expect it always to be the case. And it just, you know, I don't know. It's just everything had to fit. And with Coach Spurrier, it just seemed like everything fit. We got the players. We had the coaches. You know, we had, some of the greatest coaches. And our biggest thing was when Coach Spurrier was here, the 93 season, a guy named Rich Tootin came in to be the strength coach. He was a strength coach for the start of the four consecutive SEC championship runs and the national championship for those seniors that came in 93. But he was a major part of why we were so successful. Everybody did the exact same workout. Everybody, Coach Tootin's thing was, when Shane Edge goes out onto the field, Jason Odom is going to know as the offensive tackle that Shane gave everything that he did. You know, so everybody on the team did, you know, they busted their butt, they worked their butt off, they got quicker and they got faster, they got stronger. And with the coaching that we had, you know, if you get a guy in as a freshman, you know, say like a Jason Odom or whatever, I mean, he's going to get so much stronger, he's going to get so much faster. And then with the coaching and putting us in the right positions, you know, we couldn't. That's why we couldn't fail.
Man, thinking about things you're saying, and I'm trying to relate it to today's college football and how players come in and how that loyalty to each other is not there a lot, you know, for the most part. You know, the NIL's changed a lot of things. The transfer portal's changed a lot of things. How do you think about that?
I think you're exactly, 100%. You're exactly right. And that's why we were so good. And another reason, When I came in 91, the start of the 91 year, and came in, graduated early, I knew every player on the team before we started spring practice, because we had Jan Hall, we had Robert's Dining Hall where we all ate, and then we went over to the rec room where we all got pool, played ping pong, watched television. We all hung out. We were a family. And that's what they're not that anymore. They go to practice, they go to their meetings, and they go to their individual meetings, and you know, they have the linebackers here, and the, you know, by the time my senior year was here, I didn't know some of the freshmen because they separated us so much. You know, we couldn't have the dining hall. We couldn't have, you know, whatever. We couldn't all eat at the same time. We couldn't all play at the same time. We couldn't all work out at the same time. It's just nobody. I'm not going to say nobody because that's the wrong way to put it. But when guys know that you've gone and done the same thing that I've done, they just believe in you. They know that you put in the work. And it's not like that anymore. You know, this guy's getting this much money for NIL. He's not working as hard. Well, I'm busting my butt over here too, and I'm not getting near as much money. So, you know, obviously I'm going to have a little bit of angst towards you. You know, it's human nature. You're getting all this money and I'm not getting anything. What? Come on now. I'm going to be jealous. It's just sure. That simple, you know? And I think that's got a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. So we talked about your championships and that classic picture that I was going to bring up. You showed us before we started the interview that you have it blown up and like cut out on your wall. But for the listeners that obviously couldn't see that, Google Shane Edge Gators and it's going to come up. It's Judd. It's Shane and Sam.
Sam McCorkle. Yep, he's the head coach at Dartmouth right now.
Oh, okay, cool. And you guys are hoisting up the SEC championship sign after that 94 championship, and it's just etched in time now for you. And my question was going to be, did you have that blown up the size of your wall in a frame in your house? So obviously you sure did. So,
well,
I'm happy about that.
Oh, yeah, the locker room, you know, in the locker room, the team actually had that blown up. It's huge, and you know, for whatever reason, I can't remember who called me and said, hey, we're gonna do something with this. We're going to move it somewhere. Do you want it? I said, you daggum right, I want it. So nice. I've got it. It's in the Shane Edge Shrine, or the Gator Room, as I call it. And, you know, it's up there now. And it's really neat. I actually, as a young man, I could almost see my ads in that picture. So I don't have those anymore. There's definitely no abs anymore. So.
Abs? What are abs?
They're protected now. They're protected.
Yeah.
There you go. They have a lot of protection, buddy.
So after winning, you know, championship that year, at this point, you're like the most decorated punter. Like John said, three-time All-SEC, All-American honorable mention all 4 years you played, voted into the UF All-Century team in 06, accolade after accolade. Which one, what accomplishment at UF means the most to you?
I was the highest rated freshman in the history of University of Florida.
Wow.
It was the highest recognized honor, or whatever it was, however they put it. But I was the very first one at the University of Florida to be freshman All-American, apparently.
Very nice.
So that one, I'm very proud of that. I was the very first one at the University of Florida to get that acknowledgement. So, That one's pretty special to me. But the SEC, All-SEC, I mean, that has a lot to do with your teammates and them covering punts and things like that. But it was pretty special. I mean, that one, I would say that one would be it. But the SEC championship, more than anything, those are pretty nice.
You need to put that in your Wikipedia. You're the highest.
Well, you know what? It used to be, you know, a long time ago that we had these things called media guides. And it was in the media guides.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but I don't know if you can find it now or whatever. But, that's a true statement. I believe the next one was either Quezzy, Jacquez Green, or Ike or Riedel. They were the next one to do it, I think.
Okay.
I think Joe Hayden was the next one after that.
Jabbar definitely
I think
Jabbar had did some it. Freshman accolades too.
Jabbar, yeah, it may have been Jabbar. Yeah.
Well, in recent years, UF's brought in some monster legs. you know, the Townsend brothers, Crawshaw, oh, and others. Did you enjoy watching them? How do you feel about them sort of taking over the record books there?
Well, you had, I actually was, when Coach Zook was the head coach, me and Bart Emerson, we did a kicking camp. The, you know, just like anything else, they would have an offensive lineman and things like that come in. They also did a kicking camp at Florida, and Bart and I were part of that, and a guy named Eric Wilbur and a guy named, the Colquitts. There was a Colquitt that was coming out at the same time.
There was
Eric
like five
Wilbur
of those,
was.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, there was like 17. you know, they offered to Tennessee, but we did a kicking camp, and I told Coach Zook, I said, you really don't want this Colquitt. I mean, he was good, don't get me wrong, but Eric Wilbur was had a great leg, had a strong leg, and so he was good. And then of course you had you know, Chaz Henry, when Caleb Sturgis, I think, was there with Chaz was there.
Yep.
He had such a huge leg. And when I go back and I watch these guys, I think to myself, golly, there's no way I was that, you know, that I punted the ball that far and that high. And I think I did. I guess I did. I just don't, you know. But when they hit the ball nowadays, it's amazing to me how strong their legs are, even the field goal kickers. I mean, you know, Judd and I, we would go back to 55 yards and we would barely squeak it over the uprights. But these guys are hitting it halfway up the net at 55 yards.
So
it's
what
just
changed?
Amazing to me.
What, I mean, the motions are the same, right?
They are the same, but I think it's you know, when you're a good kicker, Eric Rhett I used to aggravate with Eric Rhett all the time. Shane, I kick the ball just as far as you. My leg's twice as strong as yours, and this, that, and other. I said, Rhett, I said, listen, bud, you have zero chance. I'll put left footed further than you can. And I said, but he just, the whip of your leg is so fast, and these guys are so strong in their legs now, and they break down certain muscles, and they get everything out of it now. Where we just kicked. We didn't know to, you know, work on this particular muscle, but that's what it is, I guess. But I'm just telling you, it's amazing to me that these kids can kick the ball as far as they can, and I'm amazed at these guys. And Crawshaw, when he hits it, oh my goodness, it's, you know, it's 5 second hang time up there, like it's just, you know, average day.
Yeah. But speaking about hang
he's
time,
very good.
After you left UF in '94, you go to camp with the Bucks, and of course their punter is Reggie Roby, who is actually my favorite punter, having grown up in South Florida watching the Dolphins. And so, can you tell us about Reggie a little bit? And didn't he used to time his hang time with his wristwatch?
Yeah, that's what was crazy about Reggie. You're talking about a great guy now. He was one of the classiest guys that you'll ever meet. You know, I'm there to take his job, but he was, and he probably had an idea that I was not going to, so he was still real nice. but no, he was super nice, and he told me that the watch that he had was an Ironman watch, and when he would go out to practice, he would punt the ball. And then when he would get back to the watch, he would start his stopwatch, and he would time his hang time. And then, he would put it down. Now, he's still missing half a second by all that, but he still said it was like 4 or 5 hang time. But I can remember the first time we ever punted in front of a live audience. You know, come out to the University of Tampa, see the Bucks play and this, that. So I've been keeping up with Reggie the entire camp. The entire camp. I'm punting the ball. My hang time is good. My hang, you know, punting far, probably, you know, 48, you know, yards, whatever. And I'm thinking, okay, listen, I really got a chance to win this thing. The first time that we punt in front of people, this joker gets up there and he hits 3 missiles back to back about 70 yards. I thought, you got to be kidding. This man hadn't done this the entire time. The last 3 weeks, he hadn't done it. So then I get up there, and I hit some really good punts, about 45 yards with 5 second hang time. But that didn't matter because he just hit missiles twice as far as I did.
Yeah.
But he was a great guy. He really was a great guy, and I really enjoyed time spending with Reggie.
Yeah, rest in peace, Reggie Roby.
Yeah. He had some cookies. I don't know if they were up in Washington or whatever, but they called them sweet spot cookies. You know, because you hit the sweet spot, They're so good.
All right, it is time. Got to talk. You teased it in the beginning. Got to talk about Zook. So I got one question to ask, and you teased it earlier, showed us the picture, but now we can get the other stories you wanted to tell us. But so a year after playing in the World League in Barcelona, you got the call from your old friend Coach Zook to come play for the Steelers. You know, we wanted you on the show ever since we talked with Judd. And Zook also told us, we got to have you on. So it's, like John said, it's a pleasure to have you on. And he told us about the infamous play with Dishman. So give us your version.
Okay. Good, because I was going to tell you a completely different story. So I get a call from Zook. Hey, you know, we want you to come to training camp and punt. Ron Stark was the punter at the time. So I competed with him. But they made a trade for a guy named Josh Miller, who stayed in the league for 10, 12 years. Really good punter, left-footed punter, but he got hurt. I got cut. Josh started the season. So when he got hurt, Coach Zook brought me back. My very first game, we're playing the Houston Oilers at the time. We're winning the game. I have a pretty good game going. And we're winning the game by, I think, 24 points, something like that. Well, Coach didn't want to risk getting a punt blocked and then scoring a touchdown or whatever, so he decided we wanted to take a safety. So I get the snap, and you know, I'm running around wasting time, and I slip a little bit. And when I slip, the only thing going through my mind, I'm thinking, if you drop this ball, you're going to get cut before you get off the field. So I go ahead and Chris Dishman pushes me out of bounds. Now, I'm out of the back of the end zone, so a guy follows me probably 10 yards outside the back of the end zone. So I'm in amongst the crowd now. Well, I turn around, and a guy, you know, the guy hits me, and all I see is a different color other than the black and gold, and I hit that jerker as hard as I could, open-handed, by the way, because I didn't want to break my hand again. So I hit him open-handed, and when he grabbed my face mask, he spun me around and stretched my neck about 3 feet. I thought he was going to break my neck. So, but luckily, you know, a couple of my guys got him, and his midsection was exposed. So I hit that joker with 3 uppercuts as hard as I could right in the belly. Okay. So we, you know, all my teammates come and we fought and we, you know, I got up again, still throwing punches and, So I get thrown out of the game. You really need to Google. You really need to YouTube Shane Edge punter, and you can watch the entire thing. It's the greatest thing ever. if you listen to the commentators, that's more fun than anything, because once I get thrown out, and they're showing me walk off the field. Matter of fact, Andre Hastings, big Georgia guy, he comes up, he said, "You just like all those Gators. You're always starting to shoot." And you can see him. You can see him as clear as day. So I get thrown out. Greg Lloyd used to call me Shane Tyson. Coach Zook, he said, "What were you thinking?" I said, "Coach, I'm in Lake City. Ain't nobody going to mess with me." but I get thrown out. Anyway, I get a Chris Berman nickname. Shane, don't push me over the edge. And, man, I didn't think about it, about anything about getting fined. My wife, of course, she was there at the ball game. She comes up. She said, "I cannot believe you did that. You know how much money that's going to cost us?" I said, "Ooh." I
hadn't thought of that.
No, I did not. I didn't think about that. But the NFL does something really cool if and I know they still do it. When you get fined, at the time, that was the most fined game in NFL history. You know, older guys would remember that Mike Tomczak was grabbed by the face mask and kind of swept up on the floor, and there was another fight previously in that game. But anyway, the NFL does something cool. My fine was donated to the Brian Piccolo Cancer Fund. So you get to pick you get to, they don't keep it. You get to pick a fund that it goes to. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So that's my story. That's my boxing story.
But you said you were going to tell another story about Zuck. What's that one?
Well, I don't know how long we got. How long did
we got all night. If you got the stories, what did you have in mind? So,
all right. I'll tell this. And that's why I wish you guys would have had Coach Zuck tell this story. But so we're going into LSU my senior year. Eddie Kennison is the leading punt returner in the country. I have the highest average in the country at 48 point whatever yards. So all week during practice, Coach Zook says, hey, we're going to punt the ball out of bounds. I don't care if it's 35 yards out of bounds, if you're going to punt it out of bounds. Well, I don't want to punt the ball out of bounds. I'm leading the nation in punting average. So I'm trying to do what the coach says. I'm trying to, you know, punt it out of bounds. And I'm shanking the ball all over the place. So it gets to Thursday, and I said, listen, I've got to get into some kind of rhythm here. So I punt the ball right down the middle. And I don't know if you guys remember where the old football field used to be. It used to be by the parking garage right there, where the indoor facility is now.
Uh-huh.
So I punt a ball about 60 yards down, right in the middle of the field. This joker comes up and grabs my face mask and cusses me for everything I'm worth. He tells me, you know, you're going to do what I tell you to do, this, that, and other. I said, okay, yes, sir. So the very next snap, I get the ball. I turn completely sideways, and I punt that son on top of the parking garage. So he kicks me out of practice. He's all pissed off. You know, so we get into it there. So come game time. All right. So we're in the swamp. First snap, I punt the ball to the left. I try to punt it out of bounds. I shank it. Luckily, it rolls 48 yards. So I still got my average. Everything's good. Well, we have a pooch punt later in the game, and Eddie Kennison catches the ball about the 9-yard line, and he makes people miss, and I make the tackle somewhere around the 19. It's still inside the 20, but Coach Zook was not very happy that I didn't punt it out of bounds. So he comes and grabs, and we get into it right there on the sideline. When I say we get into it, he's yelling and screaming a little bit, and I'm yelling and screaming a little bit also. I'm saying stuff that I definitely shouldn't be saying. So the game ends, whatever. So I know that I'm in some serious trouble. All right. So I go to the office. And Judd's going with me. I said, Judd, I got to go talk to Coach Zook. I got to apologize to him, you know, whatever. So we go into his office, and Larry Kennedy's in there. I said, Larry, I need to talk to Coach Zook. He said, you get your ass out of my office right now. And I said, oh, this is going to be a little bit worse than I thought.
Coach Zook said that, or Larry Kennedy?
No, Coach Zook said that. So Larry got up and walked out. So I said, Coach, listen. I said, players should never talk to a coach like that. You know, I understand, you know, heat of the moment. I shouldn't have said what I said. You know, he said, let me explain something to you. If that son of a gun up there didn't like you so much, you would never punt at the University of Florida again. And if he said, so you get out of my office. I said, Coach, listen, I'm here to apologize. I know you're right. I'll run as much as I need to run. I'll do whatever you need me to do. It doesn't matter. I said, I just want to make this right. You know, I'm sorry, whatever. So we go to, so we're talking about this, that, and other. And then back then they had the big TVs with the VCRs and all the VCR tapes and all that. So he's behind his desk, and I'm in front of his desk. And so he leans back in his chair and, you know, puts his hands back behind his head. He said, you know you almost got your ass kicked out of there. And I said, me? You about got your ass kicked Saturday. So that joker comes over the desk and we get into it. We're throwing each other around. No punches are thrown, but we're throwing each other around. TV's coming off. Tapes are going everywhere. Judd and Larry Kennedy come in. Coach Strong comes in, breaks it up, you know. So I've got to go talk to Coach Spurrier. Now I'm scared to death. I don't know what to do. So I go talk to Coach Spurrier. I said, Coach, me and Coach Zook have a problem. I don't know if we're going to be able to get through this. He said, I'll talk to him. It's not a big deal. So he talks to him, and he comes out there. He said, Shane, you can't talk to coaches like that. And I said, yes, sir. I said, yes, sir, I know. I can't do that. And I tried to apologize to him. He said, well, you're not kicking off against Auburn. I said, yes, sir, I understand. Whatever. You know, just take my medicine, do what I'm supposed to do. Well, Bart kicks off in the first kickoff against Auburn. The guy runs it back to about the 20-yard line. Coach Spurrier comes back and says, Shane, you got the next one.
Oh, man.
So, but anyway, Coach Zook can tell you that exact same story, but we kid about it now. And obviously, he didn't harbor any ill will because he got me up there in Pittsburgh and let me play a few games. So it was fun.
So do you guys still have a relationship today?
Oh, I love Coach Zook. Matter of fact, he was here probably last year or 2 years ago. Whenever he was with Maryland, he came through recruiting, and I knew he was going to be in town because Demetric Jackson, who played in the secondary with us, played here at Columbia and then played at Florida with us. He was the head coach at the time, and he called and said Zucker was coming in. So I went up and visited with him. Man, we it's just like we were back at Florida. You're talking, telling jokes, and he did tell me. He said, "You know, I whip your ass."
I keep thinking of that scene in Rocky, where Apollo and Rocky are going to spar.
Oh yeah,
you know, and that's Rocky picturing that's you and about Zook,
it.
You know,
listen, ding, that's ding. About it. That's about it. Yep, ding, ding. But like, I love Coach Zook. He's one of the greatest. Such a good guy.
After 5 years of pro ball, you come back to UF, you get your degree, which we saw prominently displayed, and congratulations in advance on your daughter adding to that collection there. So Thank what you. Area did you earn your degree in, and what have you been doing besides messing with Coach Zook when he comes through town since you're done hanging up the cleats?
There you go, yeah. Once I graduated, I taught school for about 10 years. PE, I taught PE at CHS and one of the other schools here in Columbia County. And then, now my son, you know, played baseball with a guy over in Jacksonville, and his son who owns a company. It's a promotional company called Horizon Promotional Products. And I've been doing that for the last 10 years, or 10 or 11 years or so, however long it is. I go to Jacksonville. You know, I have, Firehouse Subs is one of my biggest accounts, and, you know, I had to make sure all 1,600 stores are okay. They come through us when they need shirts and hats and things like that. So that's what I've been doing. It gives me a lot of freedom whenever Brock was playing baseball and, you know, through a high school and travel ball. And whenever Megan had something to do with, you know, school or cheerleading or whatever she was doing at the time, it gave me a lot of freedom to go be where they were. So it was pretty neat. I still do that to this day, I enjoy it. So. You guys need any merchandise, just let me know.
Good to know.
Yeah, who to call. Nice.
There you go.
We may dip into that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Soon. There you go.
You mentioned Brock, but your son. Go ahead.
No, I was going to tell you, I'll brag on Brock here shortly, too. But Megan, we just went down to the University of Florida. She's a junior at University of Florida. We just went down to the award ceremony for the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. That's what she's in. And she won the junior award for the whole college. So she got award to be as one of the best juniors in the school. So
wow,
it was really neat. It was really enjoyable last night. Now I will say this:
that's very impressive.
It is. She's the president of Florida Farm Bureau, Collegiate Florida Farm Bureau, and she's president of something else, and she's vice president of something else. She definitely gets that from her mother, and everybody knows that.
She gets her uppercut from her dad.
You dang right she does. That's right.
Congratulations. That's awesome. I do have a question about Brock, right, being an athlete, uh-huh. playing baseball. How cool was that to kind of see the Edge legacy in sports at UF live on?
Man, it's really special. And I've always told him, you know, I'm going to support him in whatever he does, anytime he does anything. But for him to come up through, you know, Columbia High School just like I did, and then he went to Santa Fe, played for Coach Wiggs, I love Coach Wiggs. He's one of the best coaches that Brock's ever had. And then to go on to Florida and, you know, that uniform is still hanging up here in the shrine. We'll call it the Ed Shrine. But it was really special to go to the ball games and then to end the old baseball stadium and then to break in the new baseball stadium in those jerseys. And it was special. It really was. Now we are regulated to play in pickleball.
Yeah. Me and my son do the same.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My son was a baseball player, too. He's 19. He was a baseball player, too, and they are addicted to pickleball. He's gotten me out a few times. That's what they do, man. It's crazy.
Well, Brock and I play. We're pretty competitive. Matter of fact, we played against Caleb Sturgis and his partner this weekend. The Gator Pickleball Club had a big tournament, and of course, Danny Warfel was out there, and we play against Danny all the time. But yeah, we play pretty competitive. We won the 4-5 division on Saturday, and then we lost in the money ball on Sunday. But we, you know, Brock is really good, and he's lefty, so he's a little deceptive.
I think we need to have a little showdown here between the Edges and the Pancrases.
Oh gosh, I need to practice.
We will wear you out.
I got to start training.
There you go. Well, sounds good. Like, listen, I'm in Gainesville all the time anyway, so if you guys ever around Gainesville want to play, just let me know.
Absolutely. He was there with Sully, right? He was there not too long ago.
Yeah, I think he's 2 years removed. Once he finished at Florida, he graduated, went to UNF, and got his master's at UNF his last year. He played at UNF his last year. So,
gotcha. They're a hell of a program, man. They are on top of it.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I've been several games this year, and that number 14, Caglione, might be the best I've ever seen.
He had a 516-foot home run last night.
Oh, I know. We were there. So
that's amazing.
I told Brock, I said,
you were there live. Wow.
Yeah, I told him I've never been to a game where Caglione missed a ball. I mean, when he hits it.
Where did it land?
Oh, I couldn't even see it. I couldn't see it land. It went so far. But,
wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
Saturday before that, he hit a home run off his front foot. He hit it over the right field berm out there. The one last night, last night went over the scoreboard. I mean, he's amazing. Great, great talent.
All right, Shane, we've taken up too much of your time here, and we usually end in a bit. So we're going to do a Mount Rushmore. You're going to do a Mount Rushmore of events you've worn your SEC championship rings to.
Oh, boy.
I like this one.
Mount Rushmore, so you need four events that you've worn your SEC championship rings to.
My goodness. You know what? I used to wear it, and this is a true story. I used to wear it all the time, but my wife told me I look like Elvis or Liberace or something. I said, so
Liberace.
So I don't wear those rings anymore.
You sure it wasn't the sequin one piece outfit?
Listen, I ain't scared to wear that either. I promise you. I'm very comfortable in my skin.
All right. How about we'll just do punters? Gators, punters, Mount Rushmore.
Punters, Mount Rushmore.
A lot easier.
Ray Criswell will be number one. And you know, there's so many. You put me on the spot. You got John James, who was so good, and he punted for Atlanta for all those years. But I would think that you would have to have Tommy Townsend for sure, Chaz Henry for sure, Ray Criswell, and then, of course, Shane Edge. I mean, I've got to be there.
You
got
to be there.
Got to be there.
All right, hold on. You said that really fast, so hold on. All right. Shane Edge's Mount Rushmore of Gator punters: Tommy Townsend, Ray Criswell, Chaz Henry, and Shane Edge.
There you go,
ladies and gentlemen. Shane, it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure. Thank you for taking time with us and sharing all your stories, man. We had a great time tonight. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. I enjoyed talking about that, and thank you guys for having me.
We gotta get our first dual guest show at some point with you and Judd, man. That would be fun.
Well, you guys wouldn't be able to get anything in. We just thought we would talk the entire time.
We could just sit back and let you two run the show. Well, we're okay.
Judd and Shane take over.
Right. There you go. When we get together, listen, we played so much golf together, and we talked so much trash to one another, it might be a three-hour show.
I think we'll set that up. We'll set that up at some point.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Shane. Take care, man.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you.
Love it when the greats come with the stories.
Oh, boy.
He did not disappoint.
No, not at all.
I don't know about you, but I would really love to see like a Midnight Run style movie with a friends of the show, Shane Edge and Judd Nelson, going across the country.
Judd Nelson?
Did I say Judd? Boy, I'm
How about
I'm
Judd boy. Davis?
How about Judd Davis?
Breakfast Club.
Fred McGriff play too?
Birth of Grunge. I love it.
I love it.
Oh, my gosh.
Would you describe the ruckus, sir?
That's the... That's the next special episode we're going to do. Sid's Flubs.
He had a couple this episode.
I do have a few.
They're great. They're so good, though.
They are. They are.
They're subtle. And, you know, sometimes we probably don't even catch them.
I know. There's certainly ones we've missed.
All right. Let's get to our two bits here. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Let me get a chance to get my flub out of the way.
Go ahead.
First of all, what a cool character. Like, that guy seems like he'd be a great hang. Interesting stories, sports related or not. Just very cool. That was a wonderful visit with a cool guy. But I particularly enjoyed how when I asked a question about Coach Spurrier, because we know, although he is an all-time great college football quarterback, he does fancy himself a bit of a kicker. I thought that was pretty neat, how Shane said that when Coach would come out to practice, he was like consistently perfect, dropping a form punt, even at that age, what he was like probably in his mid to late 30s, already retired from the NFL, been coaching a few years. That's pretty cool. And you know, my all-time favorite Gator, Coach Spurrier. Love hearing stories. That was a good one, and I totally visualize Coach Spurrier telling the all-time greatest Gator punter of all time, hey, let me show you how it's done, son. That was pretty cool.
Vintage Spurrier, for sure.
I'll go next, and I sort of have two, so I don't know if that's cheating or not. I'm going to go with...
Never stopped me before.
I'm going to go with him turning around and popping Lawrence Wright. Who in their right mind... would pop L Dog in the head, in the forehead.
Right.
And I love how he said, you know, he got him in the headlock and he said that he was just gonna get his butt kicked if they didn't break it up. that was a great story. But I guess my actual two bit, the information I learned tonight is that he was the highest rated freshman All-American.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
First one ever at UF.
That's how you become on the All-Century team, doing things like that.
Yeah, very cool. Andy, what do you got?
All right. So I was deciding between two, and you covered one of them. It was the Lawrence Wright. No, it's good. I'm glad, because I was going to probably lean the other one anyway. But you mentioned the Lawrence Wright, but it was also where he started with when he was a freshman, right? The cafeteria line. And someone tried to cut him, and he wasn't having none of that. So he certainly didn't take any crap from anybody. But anyway, my two bits is a little different. I'm going to go with the fact that he said he knew every player on the team.
Right,
as a freshman.
I like that.
Talks about how it used to be a family. And honestly, we've all talked about it, right? That's what we're missing today. Right? So, I don't know. Just would love to see us kind of get back to that. Not sure that'll ever happen. But love to see us get back to something like that and see what kind of success we could have. So, that's my two bits.
Yeah. Great two bits, guys. Good stuff tonight.
Great show.
Excellent. That was fun.
Yep. Judd Nelson.
Well, not another word out of you, Bender.
All right, guys. Another one in the books. It's been a pleasure. And as always, go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.